Hey, podcast pals, it's John Moe. Before we get to the show, big news to share. We have got a slew of new shows coming up in the near future. 10 new live shows this fall that we will tape and put out there on public radio stations around the country. We are now on 99 stations. Gosh, can we get one more station so we can get into triple digits? Come on, one station out there. If you want your public radio station to be the 100th station and to carry WITS, let them know. We'll also bring those new shows to you, our podcast friends. And the shows, oh my goodness, they are killer shows. They're not going to murder people, but they're really good shows, is my point. Starting October 17th. Our season punts off with NFL punter, author, and all-around fun person Chris Cluey, along with comedian, author, musician Dave Hill, and musician Sarah Watkins. She plays the fiddle. October 24th, our dear friend, one of the funniest and most popular comedians in the world right now, Paul F. Tompkins, the star of his own podcast, the Pod F. Tomcast. You've seen him on VH1, you've seen him on Community, you've seen him all over the place, and he is just about as funny as they get. And he will be on along with the rock and roll combo known as Yola Tengo. The very next night on October 25th, it's Paul F. Tompkins again, this time with singer-songwriter Rhett Miller of the old 97s. Then on November 1st, you may know her from the Girl on Guy podcast, Whose Line Is It Anyway?, The Talk, Archer, her book Self-Inflicted Wounds, Heartwarming Tales of Epic Humiliation. It's Aisha Tyler with Grammy winner Loudon Wainwright III. Only one of these two people have played Ross's girlfriend on Friends. It's not Loudon. Loudon, though, has written songs for and appeared in Judd Apatow movies. He's in the upcoming indie film Pleased to Meet Me. He's father to Rufus Wainwright and Martha Wainwright. He was on Undeclared. If you ever get a chance to go on Netflix and watch the old sitcom Undeclared, really worth your time. Loudon's in that. November 7th, from The Office, Bridesmaids, The Mindy Project, and the upcoming season of How I Met Your Mother, Ellie Kemper will be on, along with singer-songwriter Waxahachie. She's been called Lena Dunham with a guitar. So make those young person pop culture connections as you will. November 14th, comedian, author, musician, activist Margaret Cho. She's got a tattoo of George Washington on one knee and a tattoo of Abe Lincoln on the other, along with singer, songwriter, and author Josh Ritter. No word on his knee tattoos. November 21st, the very funny Jim Gaffigan, nominated for a Grammy for his latest comedy album, Mr. Universe. He has a new book out there called Dad is Fat. That's a bestseller. He is just hysterically funny. He'll be on along with rap artist Bus Driver. Then it's Thanksgiving week. We're going to take a break from our live shows. We're going to have some turkey and watch some football.
Yo, 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 gobbler, gobbler, turkey, fitsky, whiskey.
But even though we're taking a break, you podcast listeners will still get a regular feed of your show. Nothing like a good WITS podcast to go with the mashed potatoes and cranberry. Then we're back December 5th. Tim Heidecker of Tim and Eric, awesome show, great job, along with Amy Mann and Ted Leo. That's a triple threat, that show. December 13th, we'll welcome in David Cross from Mr. Show, from Arrested Development, from Alvin and the Chipmunks, along with singer, writer, actor Harmar Superstar. And on December 20th, final show of the fall season, comedian and actress Maria Bamford, one of our favorites. She's from Duluth, Minnesota, you know, along with Tao Nguyen of Tao and the Get Down, Stay Down. If you don't live in Minnesota, you should. I mean, come on, at least come visit. Come on up and see one of our shows. Come see a live show. Hear yourself laugh in this podcast. Information is at witsradio.org. Now, on with the show. Hi, I'm John Moe, the host of WITS. It's a radio show starting here in just a little bit. Comedian Paul F. Tompkins is here, and so is singer-songwriter Amy Mann. Hey, Paul. Hey, Amy.
Hey, John.
Hi, John.
Are you guys up to speed on what we're doing here?
Kind of. I mean, it's some kind of talent show, right? With accordions and kids doing magic.
No, no.
When are there going to be acrobats? Because I can't do acrobatics. I'm sorry.
No. Oh, I can and will do acrobatics, John.
Yeah, but you have that nice leotard.
Oh, thank you for noticing.
No,
Fonzie.
No. It's a variety program in front of a live audience at the Fitzgerald Theater in St. Paul. Comedy, conversation. Amy, I thought you could play a few songs.
Oh, yeah, I can do that. I mean, it's much easier than the acrobat thing you were trying to get me to do earlier.
Do that song about acrobats.
Look,
acrobatics.
Look, I think we're getting off track here with the acrobats. You'll figure it out. John Munson and the Witnesses are here. We're going to have a great time.
Okay, so when is it? Next month?
No, in just a few moments.
Good luck.
From the Fitzgerald Theater in St. Paul, this is Wits. I'm John Moe. I stand before you a man transformed. I have found guidance and my soul is at ease. And it's all thanks to one man. A man that some people thought looked pretty wild and had some pretty crazy ideas. A man born many years ago, Sammy Hagar. I was listening to an interview with Sammy a few weeks back, and the Red Rocker was talking about writing his autobiography, which was pretty much written by another guy to whom Sammy told anecdotes. See, Sammy used to be in a band called Van Halen, which is led by a guy named Eddie Van Halen, who, by many accounts, is a mentally unstable alcoholic, but he plays guitar really well, and so he's allowed to run a multi-million-dollar business. Sammy would tell his co-writer stories where Eddie was being a jerk and really awful, and then he said this terrible thing, and Eddie's just an awful guy. At which point his co-author, according to Sammy, would say, wait, just tell me what he said. Don't call anyone names. And this was a big moment for Sammy. He says, I thought this was really cool. What a way to go through life. Don't take everything personally. Don't judge everything were the lessons that Sammy was learning, and by proxy, me. Be in the moment. Don't be consumed by your opinions. Now, if Deepak Chopra or Oprah had given me this advice, or Deepak Oprah, which of course is an unholy fusing of the two, I wouldn't have listened. Or Tupac Chopra, which is a self-help hologram. I listen because it came from Sammy, and to take life lessons from Sammy Hagar is so funny that I kind of had to do it. But the thing is, it's great advice. It's not a dumb jerk cutting me off in traffic. It's a car that moved in front of me unexpectedly. Okay, now the event has passed. It doesn't have to be my kids driving me crazy because I've failed to parent them properly. It can just be a loud noise that never, ever stops, and one day they'll move out. I see political commentators on TV or online angrily opinionating, and I just think, oh, that looks exhausting. But hold on, you say, doesn't this detach me from the world? Well, yeah, it can. If I choose, that's what's so neat. I can stand outside the moment and smirk, or I can choose to dive in. I can be George Clooney's Devil May Care performance in Ocean's 11, or fully engaged Clooney in Syriana. It's the Sammy Hagar way of life, and it's even better than Sammy's way of life because I never have to deal with the Van Halen brothers at all. I'm going to start driving 54 or 56, but nothing in between. And while it may take a while to grow my hair out to the point where a frizzy perm can really work, I think we can all agree it's going to be totally worth it. And because I have allowed Sammy into my life, my heart is now open to all sorts of other life coaches. What does Pat Benatar have to say? What can Eddie Money do for me? How can I glean the wisdom of Rick Springfield? I'll tell you this. If I can get them all in one place, I can put on the raddest self-help seminar you've ever seen. We've got a great show. Please welcome our very special guest, Paul F. Tompkins. Paul F. Tompkins is a comedian frequently seen, as one might expect, on Comedy Central, because that's where they centralize the comedians. He is host of the Pod F. Tomcast on internets. What are your experiences on movies like? Because you play kind of small, fascinating parts in movies. What's that like when you walk into a situation like that?
It's
completely nerve-wracking. There is that. There's the idea in show business that movies are the real thing, and everything else is you're just kind of slumming it or whatever. That if you can be in a film, such as Deuce Bigelow, Male Gigolo, you're above somebody who's just in like Mad Men or whatever. So. So when I am on a set like that, and I've been in very few movies, and if you have seen me in that, you have very good vision. I think I maxed out at 5 lines. I think that was my biggest film role to date, is 5 lines. But it's really weird, and I feel like I don't belong, and I feel like I'm going to get in trouble. The only time that didn't happen was on the set of Tenacious D and The Pick of Destiny, where... Oh, sure, now. Where were you opening weekend? But that was one where I knew everybody already, and it was so comfortable, and you know, and that was my 5-line part. And I was like, well, this is how it ought to be all the time. But yeah, it is, I realized, like, there are certain people that are totally built for that kind of thing and love traveling to Belgravia and living there for 2 months. And that's just a kind of life that I don't think that's for me necessarily.
Would There Will Be Blood be on the opposite end of the spectrum as Tenacious D in The Pick of Destiny in terms of overall comfort level?
Yeah, I would say I played a very, very small role in There Will Be Blood. It's early on in the movie, and I have just a couple lines. With D-Day? I'm sorry, Daniel Day-Lewis. And what's so perfect about it is all my lines are delivered to his back as he's walking away. So it's the perfect encapsulation of my film career. Like, this is as good as it gets, and the other guy is not even looking at you.
One of the best actors working today is literally walking away from you while you act.
I'm acting towards him, and he is acting away from me.
And remind us again what your motivation is, what your moment was on that movie.
Well, there's a meeting going on. This meeting is not going well. Mr. Day-Lewis storms out of the meeting. My job is to run after him and beg him to stay at the meeting. Spoiler alert. He does not stay at the meeting.
Did you call upon previous experiences in trying to get people to stay at meetings?
Yes,
in order
I did.
To find?
Well, believe me. I did sense memory exercises. I called up friends. Have we been to meetings together that didn't go well?
And you wanted to leave?
Yeah.
And then?
Yeah. I met with people who run meetings. Does anyone ever leave? How do you get them to stay?
Can I live with you for a month?
I met with people and left to see how they would react. I got deep.
Yeah.
I got deep in that guy's head, crawl around in there.
Paul, you are going to provide some helpful information for the public now.
Yes, I am, John. This is something that I have done on my my live show in Los Angeles at the Largo at the Coronet Theater, and it has also been heard on my podcast. This is a thing where I take advice columns from the 50s and 60s and 70s, and I answer them from the viewpoint of the 21st century. And I call it advice to the probably dead. From March 14th, 1955.
I am still in love with a boy who used to take me out 3 years ago, but he's just friendly and quite indifferent to me. Is there any way I can win him back? Like playing hard to get or telling him that I love him? None of the other boys I've been out with compare with him, and I just can't fall in love with anyone else.
Wow. Your letter bummed me out royal. Let me tell you, if it's been 3 years and he's friendly but indifferent, I don't think he'll respond to hard to get. He'll probably take that as mission accomplished. Oh, and telling him you love him is not a good idea. You know when it's good to tell people you love them? When you're reasonably sure they love you back. Here's what you never want to happen. You tell a boy you love him, and he makes a face. See, if it comes down to acting like you don't care or blurting out that you care too much, you should consider maybe giving other boys a chance. What makes this guy so great anyway? His friendliness or his indifference? Surely some other fella out there can, say, ask you about the weather slash not care if you live or die, right? From July 21st, 1965.
I wonder if other women have had this stunt pulled on them and how they handled it. I have been invited to luncheons and even dinner parties where there are three and sometimes four hostesses who have gone in together to give the party. Now, I always reciprocate when I have accepted an invitation, but at some of these affairs, I have known only one hostess, the one who invited me. Am I indebted to all the hostesses or just the one who invited me? Please print the answer. Either I have a lesson to learn or some of my friends have.
Oh, you poor archaic manners prisoner. Here's how much things have changed. I had to look up the word hostess because I forgot what it means. So you're upset that four people got together to throw a party and you feel like you have to have a party and invite all four of them even though you only know one of them. So you're asking if you have to invite strangers into your home because they co-threw a party? You would lose your mind if you knew how people handled parties today. It is awesome. We say we're going to go, then flat out don't, with no explanation. We show up empty-handed and get super drunk and uncomfortably full on homemade snacks. We leave without saying goodbye, and we snub people left and right. And everybody goes along with it. It is social chaos, and it works great. But I know, you're trapped back there in a time when you had to send a thank you note to someone who told you you had a pretty hat. Here's what you do. Invite these three total strangers over to your house and no one else. They will be wildly uncomfortable. Just keep offering them stuff. Really play it up. Don't give them anything. When they try and make small talk, give them one-word answers and ask if they'd like more canapes. When it becomes too excruciating and they make their excuses to leave, wait until they're just barely on the other side of the door and slam it, then laugh hysterically. You're welcome. And that's it for advice to the problem we did.
Virginia Corbett and Janie Haddad-Tompkins as the ladies Time Forgot. You are tuned in to Wits. Congratulations. Good call. I'm John Moe. You're listening to Wits. I'm John Moe here with Paul F. Tompkins. Today is a big day for history buffs, the anniversary of Luxembourg's independence, which explains all the drunken reverie in teensy-weensy, very wealthy bars. Also the anniversary of Minnesota being granted statehood. Finally, independence from France. And on this day in 1846, President James K. Polk...
Whoa, John, careful.
John Munson, everyone. What do you mean, careful, John?
Well, you know what happens when you say that president's name in Minnesota.
Who, James K. Polk?
Stop! That was two. If you say it three times, he appears.
John, that is crazy.
Please, just don't. I'm scared. The band's scared. And I'm told he's not very nice.
Okay, folks, I confess I'm not a native Minnesotan, so I didn't know about this. But I am a rational person, and I will prove to you that nothing happens. James K. Polk. There, you see? It was nothing to worry about. Radio audiences, you can't see this, but there's a blinding light here, and fog, and lasers, and a chariot.
Ahoy there, losers.
Are you James K. Polk?
President James K. Polk.
I'm sorry, President James...
Leader of victorious war against Mexico, establisher of an independent treasury, issued the first postage stamps. What up, philatelists? Opened the Smithsonian, broke ground on the Washington Monument, time-traveling history repairman.
Wait, what?
And all in one term. Didn't even run for re-election. Died of cholera 3 months after leaving office. Pow! Go big and wrap it up. The Polk plan.
But time-traveling history repairman?
When I was proven to be so powerful, the gods, the true gods, the Norse ones, granted me time-traveling abilities to encourage everyone to go big and wrap it up.
Wow. This is a lot to take in.
I brought a clip.
Oh, good.
Oh, this Great Depression. How misnamed you are. There's nothing great about you, except you're huge and depressing. So depressing.
Pardon me, President Hoover. I think I can help.
President James K. Polk? But you're dead.
Now you listen to me, Hoover. You need to get this country off the mat.
I was thinking of building the Hoover Dam.
Don't be stupid, dummy. Here's what you do. Everyone in the country grabs their guns and invades Mexico.
Why, I have no quarrel with Mexico.
That will make the invasion go easier. You take over Mexico. Everyone gets some sun, some Aztec gold, depression over.
I'll do it. Thanks, James K. Polk.
And that is why Mexico is one of the American states today? I thought that invasion was Hoover's idea.
It was me, dummy, the Pokemon. Riding aboard Odin's mighty time travel chariot.
My goodness.
That's not all. Roll clip two.
President Roosevelt, this war shows no sign of ending. We are out of ideas.
I agree, Mr. Churchill. We must find a way to stop Hitler. But how? We've tried everything.
Not everything, idiots.
Sir, how dare you?
No, it's okay, Winnie. I've heard about this. It's President Polk. Thank goodness you're here. What can we do?
The answer should be obvious. Maybe not to you. Mexico. Attack it. Like crazy.
This is preposterous. Mexico is not the problem. It's Nazi Germany. It's Japan and occasionally maybe Italy.
And Mexico's an American state ever since the Hoover invasion.
Oh, I get it. You think the way to win wars is to do the expected. No wonder you're losing. Every man, gun, tank, and plane into Mexico. Do it! James K. Polk!
President Polk, you mean to tell me that the famous Mexican maneuver was your idea? That wrapped up World War II in 1941.
That's right, JKP.
All of Europe was taken over by the Soviets, but Hitler was baffled to death. I guess you were important to both history and politics.
And culture, dummy.
Culture?
Clip three!
Oh, J.J. Abrams, we are in a mess with our show Lost.
We got a crazy island, a smoke monster, characters who don't know what's going on.
And we don't know either, Damon Lindelof, other creator of Lost.
Yeah.
I bet the audience thinks we have some big master plan, but we don't.
No.
If we don't think of something, it'll end years from now with an unsatisfying apotheosis.
Oh, if only James K. Polk were here.
James K. Polk?
James K. Polk.
Stuck, are you? Here, stupids. I've written a script that ought to solve everything. Polk, out!
Thanks.
Lost. Yeah, I remember that show. At the end of the first season, they all put up their own Washington monuments, established a treasury, issued stamps, and then promptly died of cholera. It was a very satisfying ending.
Mexico is that way. You know what to do.
James K. Polk, everyone. This has been a presentation of the Witz Historical Foundation. You're listening to Wits. I'm John Moe, here with Paul F. Tompkins and Amy Mann. Amy Mann writes and sings beautiful, deep, smart songs. A lot of us have been listening to her do so from her work with the band Till Tuesday, through her solo work on the Magnolia soundtrack, loads of really wonderful, moving albums. Amy, you go back quite a ways with Paul F. Tompkins. When did you start working, collaborating, conspiring with Paul?
I feel like we've known each other a long time. Way, 15 years or something like that.
That sounds about right, yeah.
Oh, my Lord, yes. And then we started collaborating, I think was at the Acoustic Vaudeville thing.
Yes.
My husband and I... we would go to, there's this little club in Los Angeles called Largo, and we played there a lot. And on Monday nights, they had comedy nights, and so we went to every comedy night, and we became friendly with Paul, who was our favorite. And then at one point, after a show that Michael Penn is my husband, that Michael and I had done, we were sort of, discussing the show and saying, you know, I felt like I played pretty well, but I really froze on stage and I didn't know what to say between songs. And so we got this idea, like, maybe what we should do is, since our comedian friends are experts at the banter part, why don't we have them do our banter for us and sort of like a pinch hitter? So we started playing shows like that we called Acoustic Vaudeville, and I took it on the road and everything. So that was the first thing we really did together.
Let's move from our comedy into our music. Amy, play us some music, won't you?
All right.
Girl in need.
You went from moonlighting to came out fighting. I saw you under the light, throwing your knife, gone into deep hiding. But you were so charming, but it was due. Take it, take it, take it. We've all
So sip and roll till you're willing to take the
with Paul Bryan, Joe Savage, Steve Rome, Richard Medick, Peter Sands, Janie Winterbauer, and John Munson. It's the Wits Lightning Round. Brief questions, sharp answers. Here we go. Are you ready? Doesn't matter. Here we go. Paul, what has become of Paul Tompkins's A through E?
If you send in your box tops, you will get the treasure map.
Follow-up question, will Paul G. Tompkins be better than you?
Never.
Amy Mann, of all the people who've influenced you, who has influenced you the least?
Sammy Hagar.
Oh, okay.
Can I just tell you very briefly that I met a woman one time who said, I'm a big fan, I love your music, you're one of my two favorite lyricists. And I said, of course. Oh, what is the other one? And she said, Sammy Hagar. Yep.
That's vaunted company. Yeah. That's you're keeping good company.
I like that you responded, of course, when she said you were one of her two. Of course I am.
Paul F. Tompkins, how would you play Amy Mann in a movie?
Poorly.
Amy Mann, if you had to pick an animal to replace humans on the Earth, which one would it be?
The giraffe.
Naturally. Again, of course. Paul F. Tompkins, in a fight between a shark and a gorilla, where the shark has robot punching arms and a gorilla has robot chomping jaws, and it's in a swamp, who would win?
The Swamp Thing, the mystical guardian of the swamps. He doesn't put up with no mess.
Amy Mann, in a fight in a swamp between a shark and a gorilla, and they're both really drunk on tequila, who wins?
I think we all win because just the viewing of it, the audience of that wins.
Much more still to come. This is Wits. Oh, hello. I didn't see you come in. Please, make yourself at home. This is Wits. I'm John Moe. Pop song correspondences. Concerning John Bon Jovi, wanted dead or alive. Attention, law enforcement personnel.
It's all the same. Only the names will change every day. Seems we're
I realize many of you are burnt out on these all points bulletins, but I urge you to pay close attention in our pursuit of one John Bon Jovi. He's wanted, wanted dead or alive. Who is Bon Jovi? Well, he's a cowboy.
I'm a cowboy, been on a steel horse I ride. I'm wanted, dead or alive.
You see, Bon Jovi is no regular cowboy. He rides a horse made of steel. A steel horse. I'm not pulling your leg like a leg puller here. And don't think this is some sort of comical, clunky robot horse with whimsical hydraulic sound effects and extraneous flashing lights. This thing is like a thoroughbred, only much bigger.
I walk these streets, a loaded six string on my back. I play for keeps, 'cause I might not make it back.
Reports differ on whether the loaded six-string he uses is a kind of crossbow, or whether it's actually a guitar that he plays with such shocking mastery as to render victims helpless. Regardless, take heed.
Sometimes I sleep. Sometimes it's not for days. And the people that I meet always go their separate ways.
He can go for days without sleeping. Days. So he's been known to drive all night just to get back home. His house has an adjoining Cybertronic horse barn. We're casting a pretty wide net here. So why are we looking for Bon Jovi? Why is he wanted? Wanted dead or alive?
I've been everywhere.
Face rocking. He has rocked every single face he has seen. Every one of them. Will he stop at 1 million faces? 2 million rocked faces? How many will be enough? We can't afford to find out. Now, all this being said, if you should come in contact with Bon Jovi, do not look him in the face. He will only rock your face in reply. And call for backup immediately. Bear in mind, this man has been everywhere. He stands tall, and he rides a steel horse.
I'm a cowboy. On a steel horse I ride. I'm wanted.
Wanted.
Dead or alive. I'm wanted.
Wanted.
Dead or alive.
Good luck to you all. At this point, I have to be honest, we're living on a prayer. Sincerely, Sergeant H. Locklear. I'm John Moe, and you are listening to Wits. It is a program. Support for Wits comes from Ernest Hemingway brand greeting cards, makers of such popular cards as A Birthday, You Are Older, You Feel Your Body Ache, probably from all that bullfighting. And We Fought With Our Fists, The Spanish Men Were in the Bar, Nothing Changes, I Lit a Cigarette and Fought a Bull, We Were Drunk, There Was a War Going On, Happy Bar Mitzvah. Wits is also brought to you by Brevity. With additional funding by Spoilers. Spoilers want to remind you that at the end of their lives, all humans die. Spoilers! And now, the Wits Game Show. Because all art, whether it be music or comedy, needs to be quantified and judged. Otherwise, why do it? As always, we tailor the game to match the unique talents of our beloved guests. Paul F. Tompkins and Amy Mann are a couple of Hollywood weirdos and have worked in motion pictures. This week's game is called Clash of the Hollywood Weirdo Titans. I will give you the name of a film that does not exist. Paul, drawing on your rich movie industry experience, you give us the synopsis. Amy, the opening theme song is your department. Now, there is a wrinkle.
During the game, you may each use a lifeline by calling on your opponent to give your answer for you, but you will receive the points. Now, will that person help you or hurt you? You don't know. As always, I will judge unfairly and capriciously and announce the winner of each round, and nobody will be satisfied. Are we ready?
Yes.
Paul, you go first.
Not at all.
Okay, perfect. Paul, the first movie is The Thumpening.
Ah,
oh, Jesus.
The Thumpening. You know, have you missed the days of the big screen epics? Cecil B. DeMille, others. Well, they're back and better than ever. Stacy Keach making his big screen directorial debut. It's bringing you the story of a ragtag band of misfits getting together to pull one last defense of Earth against alien invasions. We have the locksmith. The trapeze guy. Mr. Freeze. The Artful Dodger. Let's throw Marilyn Manson in there.
I think I'm
acting debut.
I'm sorry, Paul. We're at time. I've got to cut you off.
I think people got the idea.
Yeah, I think that's all pretty obvious with the locksmith. Amy Mann, opening theme of The Thumpening, please.
The locksmith and Mr. Freeze. Days of Cecil B. The Thumpening. The Thumpening. The Thumpening.
Point to Amy Mann. Amy Mann wins the round. I'm sorry.
Even I wouldn't have given it to me.
Yeah. That's an Amy Mann point for sure. Now, Amy, this time you go first.
Oh, Jesus.
The guy with the hat who did the thing.
All right, give me a... Oh, boy. The guy with the hat who did a thing, you know him. He's a guy. He's just like every guy who does a thing. He's a guy with a hat who does a thing with a hat, and he does a thing with a hat. You know him.
Okay. It was a catchy melody. You didn't really expand on it very much,
no.
But it was definitely catchy. Paul, give us a brief synopsis of the guy with the hat who did the thing.
Vincent Gallo.
Oh.
And Vincent Gallo play both a guy and a hat. Only Vincent Gallo, the guy, can see Vincent Gallo, the hat. No one will believe that this is really happening. And he is consistently referred to as, you know that guy with the hat does that thing?
Point to Paul F. Tompkins.
Oh!
He earned it.
Tied it up.
Oh, thank you. He won't hurt you. Don't tell him.
I said it was going to be unfair and capricious. I don't know what you want.
Just because you can't play guitar, don't act like she's some magical creature that came down from a mountain.
All right.
Watch your step.
Paul F. Tompkins, this one to you. Emu attack.
I'm going to turn that one over to Amy.
Oh.
Oh, so Amy,
no.
Amy, this is a synopsis, not a
song. That's right.
Oh,
That's right.
He used his lifeline.
Yeah.
Now, remember, you can use yours back at him.
No, I'm going to give it a try.
All right, then.
A family of 16 goes off into the wilds of Australia to rough it. The parents are trying to teach the kids a lesson about how to appreciate what they have.
Yeah, that's right.
So they're living rough in the plains or jungles of whatever Australia has. Plains, some kind of, it's wild. Look, I don't know everything.
When do the emus attack?
Well, they settle in and things are going pretty well. Sort of like Gilligan's Island, they start making huts out of grass, thatch, and crocodile skin.
Get to the emu attack.
The emu's attack. What do you want me to say? It's a simple plot. Half the kids get eaten. The other half make it out alive. And then they're grateful for their toys after that. It's not a very good movie.
All right. Now, Amy, do you wish to do the emu attack song as well, or do you wish to use your lifeline and have Paul do the song?
I could play you some.
If so, you choose.
Wait, so what's happening?
You're doing the song.
I'll do the song?
Yeah.
Why is she playing the guitar?
Okay, you're going to do an acapella version? Yeah, come, go ahead. Go ahead, smarty pants.
It's called, what's the name of the film?
Emu Attack.
Just Emu Attack?
Yeah, it's in all caps.
Thank you. That is good information to have.
Emu attack, emu attack, it's happening, emu attack. We gotta run before those emus attack. We gotta get our family back on track. Oh, we went into the wilds of Africa or someplace. There's jungles, there's haystacks. Hey, what's going on? We got an emu attack. It's got an emu attack for you.
All right.
That was outstanding. Wow.
Ladies and gentlemen, this has never happened before in the history of the Wits Game Show, but I'm afraid it's not even a tie. We have double winners. Amy Mann and Paul F. Tompkins, dual winners. Amy Mann, Paul F. Tompkins, John Munson, and the witnesses. I think we can all agree that our audience has had a nice time tonight. They've been listening, they've been laughing. But I think they need to take a more active role in this show at this point. Don't you guys think so?
John, how could that be possible, though?
Oh, I think there's a way.
I throw my hands up in the air sometimes, say it.
Plans. I'm wearing all my favorite brands. Give me space for both my hands. Yeah, cause it goes on.
Yeah, it goes on. I throw my hands up in the air sometimes, say, gotta let go. I wanna celebrate and live
sometimes say,
is produced by Larissa Anderson. Our team includes Mark Sanchez, Rob Byers, Julia Schrenkler, Jen Deo, Jeff Kamen, Bethany Barberg, and the staff of the Fitzgerald Theater. Wits is written by me with help from writer-performers Bill Corbett, Kevin Murphy, and Joseph Scrimshaw. Janet Jackson's best album was Rhythm Nation 1814. Special thanks to actors Janie Haddad Tompkins, Virginia Corbett, and Neil Gaiman. Music director John Munson and the witnesses Steve Rome, Joe Savage, and Janie Winterbauer with help from Peter Sands and Richard Medick. Musical guest Amy Mann. And of course, Paul F. Tompkins. Wits is developed by Tony Boll and Peter Clowney and is a production of APM, American Public Media. Find us online at witsradio.org, on Twitter, @wits. I'm John Moe. Bye now.